The latest nursing news and information brought to you by the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future. This is Nursing Notes Live. Nursing Notes Live is an audio extension of the national award-winning monthly e-newsletter, Nursing Notes, which offers the latest industry news, trends, and updates in nursing. You can subscribe to the e-newsletter at www.discovernursing.com. Each month's Nursing Notes issue is accompanied by a select few episodes of Nursing Notes Live, which expands on the content and provides you greater insights into the topics presented in the e-newsletter. You can listen to previous episodes of Nursing Notes Live on our podcast player over at discovernursing.com or subscribe to the podcast series on iTunes. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. On Nursing Notes Live this month, we look at nurses specializing in helping patients with obesity and type 2 diabetes. In this episode of the Nursing Notes Live podcast, I got the chance to sit down and chat with a panel of nursing experts, including Michelle McDonough, an occupational and environmental health nurse practitioner for HealthStat, Inc. in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. McDonough is a 2015 alumna of the Duke Johnson & Johnson Nurse Leadership Program and completed a project on nutrition and obesity. Also joining us on the panel is Kathy Haney, National Association of School Nurses Board of Director and a past participant in the Rutgers University School Health Leadership Program from Johnson & Johnson. Here's that discussion. Kathy and Michelle, I want to thank you both for coming on Nursing Notes Live this month. We're talking about obesity and chronic disease management in our society and how nurses integrate with that. And so it's great to have you both on the show.
Thank you, Jamie.
So we'll start off with our traditional first question. And Kathy, that's we'll start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you wanted to become a nurse and a little bit about your education and career path?
Well, like most high school students, you really, you know, you come to graduation and you think, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And I'd always been felt very good about helping people and assisting people. So I just went the direction of the nursing degree then. And once you get into, or for me, for once I got into the nursing part of it in the clinical setting, it was just like it opened a whole new door. I mean, you are able to assist so many people and really help them in their time of need. And I started out my career as a NICU nurse, and to see those mamas come in and those critical babies, and you're just praying, Lord, please let them, you know, just make it from this day to the next. And when you see that finally you've got a healthy baby that's being discharged home after them being whatever illness or condition they had, it just gave you a sense of pride and belonging, because those kids are your kids too. So that just kind of made, you know, just facilitated and concreted the decision that I made. And after working in a hospital setting in all sorts of kind, from pediatric to everything, it gave me the background and the knowledge that I needed. Right now, I am a school nurse, and I've been a school nurse for 17 and a half years. And it was kind of like putting me in a different arena with different kids. There is so much need in the public school systems across the country, and our kids are our greatest assets. Obesity is one of the leading causes of heart disease and just a whole host of different problems that these kids are experiencing. And in Arkansas, obesity is the highest rate in the country. And that's kind of ironic, since we're one of the first states that started to do the body mass index to start tracking all this back about 10, 15 years ago. So that just kind of facilitated why there needs to be a nurse in every school, because education is a big part of what's going on. And if we don't educate our children, the ones that are going to be the leaders in the next 10 years, then we're not doing them a justice. So I have a master's degree in nursing. I am a Johnson & Johnson School Health Fellow Leader, graduated in 2013 from there through Johnson & Johnson and Rutgers University. I have a master's degree, kind of came up the ranks, started as an associate degree nurse and then a bachelor's degree nurse, and now a master's. And hopefully in the next couple of years, I'm going to try to get a DNT. So that's my story.
Excellent. Michelle, how about you?
Well, I really feel like nursing has always been in my blood. I remember when I was 4 years old, I received a little play school kit with a stethoscope and a hammer, and I wanted to be a nurse with all my dolls, with my family. And as I started going through grade school, middle school, and high school, I was involved in different community organizations that involve volunteering and helping people. And then finally in high school, I became a candy striper, and I saw the nurses on the floor and saw how they were just very caring and very gentle, empathetic with the patients. And I said, you know, this is what I want to do. That's what I want to do, you know, after I graduate from school. So I went to college and I completed my sciences and did my nursing clinicals. And during the time I were doing my clinicals, I realized that this is exactly what I want to do. You know, just doing the bed baths and passing out the medications, doing the teaching with the patients, and having that extra time talking with the patients about different diseases or different fears. I knew that then that was my calling. So I became a cardiac step-down nurse in 2001 and was immediately saw the impact of obesity and poor diet and nutrition with a lot of the patients that were coming in for quadruple bypass surgery or different types of heart procedures such as cardiac stents. They had high cholesterol, diabetes, and I saw how these diseases affected them not only on a physiological level, but on a personal level as well. Their families were affected, and it really was an eye-opening experience for me to try to understand more about how these disease processes really not only affected the patient and their families, but at the community level as well. So I went and studied for my master's in public health with a concentration in occupational and environmental health nursing. And then 2 years later, completed my master's of nursing and science, master of science in nursing, as an adult health nurse practitioner. And I've been a nurse practitioner since about 2012 and really focusing on the disease process of diabetes, obesity, tobacco use, and how it really affects not only the patients, but the community as a whole.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was looking at your background, Michelle, and yours too, Kathy. But Michelle, with you working in a setting of workplace and community wellness, is really an interesting area and something I've been talking a lot about in some of my other journalistic endeavors as a nurse try to tell other nurses that this is a great opportunity for people to reach out to the community in this push right now for workplace wellness programs. And do you see a lot of success there? Do you see that this is an opportunity for change in the future?
Absolutely. I feel like, well, I understand that the way that the healthcare is changing under the Affordable Health Care Act, the premiums are going up for both employees and employers, and the cost of living is increasing. And the workplace is the prime opportunity for individuals to make a change because this is where they spend most of their time. So it's very important for me to, first of all, understand and listen to the patient, hear about their lifestyle, understand what their fears and what their desires are, what they want out of life, what they want out of really living a healthier lifestyle. And going from there, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but really focusing on the individual and what they enjoy eating, understanding some of the cultural aspects of what they like to eat, how they can divvy up their time throughout the day, because many of these employees have kids or they have to go home and take care of a loved one. So really, how to incorporate a healthier lifestyle into their day-to-day activity. Sometimes when employees come in and say, well, I don't have time to exercise. Well, if they're sitting at a desk for anywhere from, 4 to 6 hours through the day, I tell them, well, you can run in place for 2 minutes at your desk. And so we try it in the office, and we notice that their heart rate's going up, their legs start to burn, and they realize, wow, that really was a workout. Even though they didn't think that they could really burn any calories, they actually were able to burn anywhere from 80 to 120 calories within that 2 minutes. Cutting out sugared flavored beverages, Pepsi's, different types of soda, switching now to tonic or flavored water, we were able to successfully do that with many employees. Switching out snacks that came from the vending machine and talking with the patient and having them, talking with the employee and having them understand that, preparation is also key to making a successful change. Going home and making a list of what they are most likely to eat when they're at work. So having them bring in fruit and cheese, as opposed to getting a Snickers at the vending machine, really does help make a difference. And there are small baby steps. You have to make small changes. And these employees did not gain the weight in a short amount of time. So, we do look at other factors that could contribute to weight gain, such as hormones, looking at their fasting sugar levels. And we address those issues first, but we also focus heavily on the behavior change.
And it's interesting because we have two different nurses coming at this from two different directions because, Kathy, you have the children, the student nursing aspect of this, and Michelle's having parents of these students coming home with maybe a healthier lifestyle focus, and you're working on it from the other direction, hoping maybe the kids are taking a healthier lifestyle focus home as well.
Yes, and that's a part of part of the issue that we see, because so many parents today are working and they either leave before their children get on the bus to ride the bus to school, or those of parents who do drop them off run through McDonald's or Wendy's or Hardee's or wherever and grab whatever to go for breakfast. And then if they don't like what's on the lunch menu for the day, they'll drop them off at the convenience store and they'll get a bag of chips, a Coke, and a candy bar, and that's their lunch. So education is a very key point that the school nurses are trying to get involved in. And there are, we have even developed some studies in kindergarten and in pre-kindergarten for us to be able to talk about healthy diet issues and healthy foods and, just like Michelle, incorporate exercise. Because, when all of us were growing up, you had 2 to 3 recesses a day and you were outside. You weren't sitting on the computer. And so many times now these children go home, their parents are working, so they stay on the phone or on the computer, or they're sitting in front of the TV with their video games or whatever. They don't get to go outside and ride their bicycles and, climb trees and dig in the dirt and different things like that, which, that with the not healthy eating and the lack of exercise are really the two components that, like Michelle has stated before, that has become a real issue. So in the schools, what we try to do is teach healthy eating habits. And you know, you can have, instead of having a Snickers bar, you can have, you know, some almonds or some nuts and a piece of fruit or you some cheese or something like that. And you just like Michelle also addressed, and replace those drinks and sugary drinks with flavored water or, you know, just plain water, just something to give them an alternative. Yes, we all prefer to have the sugary stuff. I mean, that's in our nature. But once they start seeing the benefits of not having the sugary drinks and the sugar snacks, then they see that they are able to walk from here to the football stadium and not get winded. Or when the coach asks them to run a lap, you know, they can run all the way to the end of the gym floor and back and not have to stop and catch their breath. So once they start seeing those rewards, it's beneficial to them. And hopefully our goal, like with Michelle, is for these students, to teach these students to go home and to assist their parents in a healthier lifestyle. So.
Yeah, and I the interesting thing I hear you both say is that really it's these simple nursing interventions, and it's one of the things that I've been seeing when I look at studies and look at some of the news items out there regarding wellness in the community and these public health initiatives, is that it seems to be the simple changes, the small incremental things that seem to be making the biggest difference. I'm wondering, Michelle, what is it about the nursing process that lends itself so well to this type of management of public health?
Really looking at the behavior. In nursing school, we are always taught to listen to the patient. So the nurses should really be doing less talking and more listening, and really listening to the patient to figure out exactly what's going on in their life. As Kathy has stated, when these patients, when they come to you, they're either at a stage of pre-contemplating or contemplating about making a change. And so at our clinic, we really look at the behavioral stages of change. And at the pre-contemplation stage, the patient is trying to figure out whether or not they want to do this. So at that point, as the clinician or provider, you know, we provide a few resources because we don't want to overwhelm them, such as the American Heart Association, the American Diabetic Association. And if they are not really computer savvy, then I go on up to date and print out a few resources that are relatively easy to read, and have them review the information. And then I tell them, okay, let's follow back up in 1 to 2 weeks and let's talk about this. And hopefully they're in that contemplation stage, which is the next stage, the next phase, that, you know, they're ready to make a change. And, you know, we really want them to be at that point where they're ready to make a change. They want to know, okay, what are the tools that I'm going to need to do this? And it's a very, very slow and tedious process. Tedious for the patient, of course, very exciting for us as providers. But, you know, we tell them that there's going to be relapse and you may not do what you intend to do when you get to the point of making this change. But the point is, you know, driving them back to this, to the stage of doing and really feeling successful and really feeling accomplished, because it's those little trials, those little achievements that they make, those little strides that actually keep them going. So today they may give up soda once or twice a week, and then next week when you talk to them, they've actually given up soda for the most part completely. And then when you talk to them in 2 to 3 months, you're surprised because you hear that they're using low-calorie sweeteners or natural sweeteners such as honey or agave nectar. And these are actual, you know, true life experiences that I've experienced at the manufacturing facility that I work at. You have to give these patients a chance to make that change. And, you know, don't, the sky is really the limit for them. You know, it doesn't matter how much money they're making or not making. If they want to make the change, they're going to give up something else in their life to do this and do this the right way. But they just need us as a clinician, as an educator, to help promote that change.
Kathy, do you have any thoughts?
Well, and I think, too, education is the key. With me working in the public school environment, and education is such a driving force with everything, that by educating these students will make them better adults. And identifying risk factors due to the obesity issue also, it's like a light bulb goes on in their head, because they don't ever connect eating a candy bar with diabetes or eating a candy bar or high fatty foods with heart disease. So once you go in and you can talk to them about that, then they start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And I think we've done an injustice because we don't start with nutritional education in with our children early on. And a lot of people do not understand, even very educated people, the ways that the body system works. And it's like I tell, when I go talk to my financial planner, I tell them, I know nothing about finance. You have to explain it to me on a very elementary level. I can tell you all day long about medical issues and problems and complications, but a lot of people, they think by going to the doctor every year and taking my medicine like I need, and yeah, they tell me I need to walk up the stairs instead of take the elevator every time. They really aren't able to connect the dots. So education, just like Michelle has said, is the key, and we have to listen to what our students and our patients are telling us in order to help them connect the dots.
You know, as we wrap up here, we're getting to the end of this. I think we could probably continue talking about this topic for quite some time, but we do have a time limit. So my final question, and I'll start with you, Kathy, is what advice do you offer to a nurse that's working in a setting where they are trying to help people realize this incremental change? Is there something they should focus on, or something, some resource they should find? I know there's tons of resources over at the National Association of School Nurses site on childhood obesity, and a lot of those lessons can be extrapolated out to the entire family.
Well, and that's the other issue too. When I go talk to kindergarten students, we talk about what kind of foods mama's cooking at home, or how she can help mama cook better food or make better choices at the grocery store. So, you know, it's just like Michelle said, we have to listen to what our students or our patients are saying, and we have to understand what they are needing. We have the resources as clinicians to pretty much find any resource that will help anybody. You can't go in, if you're trying to talk to a diabetic student's parents about him eating pizza and French fries and his blood sugar is 500, then mama walks in the door and she weighs 500. You can't automatically say, well, you've got to have to start losing weight, because she's going to pull up a very big block. You've got to start very small, like Michelle said. And by doing that, you need to maybe educate the child, which can go home and educate the mom to say, hey, I think my blood sugar would come down if we would get out and walk every afternoon for like 10 minutes. Hey, mom, can you go with me to do that? That you're doing twofold. You're educating the child and you're educating the parent. And if the resources are there and they want more information, then we can adapt that. It's just like the Diabetes Association. I know all over the country, the Juvenile Diabetes Association has a walk every fall. You know, I see students in those walks. I don't see their parents in those walks. So that's an avenue that we can, it's just one example of how we can encourage all of them to do that. And a lot of the position papers that the School Nurses Association on the national level do is every 5 years we revamp those to come out with the latest resources and the latest information that's available. And if you'll look at those, just like you said, Jamie, they're twofold. They can be used for the student and they can be used for the parents.
Michelle, how about you? Any resources or advice you'd offer to a nurse getting started in maybe a workplace or community wellness?
I would say to be creative. Part of my success in helping a lot of the employees at the facility recognize that some of the choices that they were making were not ideal was making it a sensory experience. So having them taste test different snacks, having them look at what a gram of sugar was equal to and the amount of tablespoons that they were putting into their body. But be creative. You know, with YouTube and Facebook out there, you know, and just really try to use different approaches to reach different people, to reach them in a different way that they'll be able to accept and appreciate. I find that a lot of times that standing up and talking for about 30 to 45 minutes really doesn't do anything. But if I make it a sensory experience and make the patients work for the information where they have to work in groups or work with one another, then they seem to really understand the point that I'm trying to make. So just be creative. Understand that the younger generation is very talented. You know, you guys are very talented. You have things that you know what will appeal to the younger generation, to other people. So the information is always going to be out there. The results from studies that were conducted 3 to 5 years ago, it's always going to be out there, but the approach is always going to really change depending on which generation and group of people you're talking with. So just really try to be creative.
Make sure you check out the entire October 2015 issue of Nursing Notes, where we take a look at nurses specializing in obesity and diabetes patient care. You can read the entire issue online at www.discovernursing.com. And don't miss the other Nursing Notes Live episode this month, where I sit down with our get-to-know nurse, Mary Freund Wilson, a nurse practitioner and diabetes nurse educator at Metro Health in Wyoming, Michigan. She was the recipient of the 2014 Healthcare Champion Award from the American Diabetes Association. You'll find this and other episodes of Nursing Notes Live in the podcast area on iTunes, as well as our new podcast player on discovernursing.com. Nursing Notes Live is produced for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future by Medicast Productions. All rights reserved.